Welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. Today I am actually doing the interview as Lubna Hamdan is off sick. So we wish Lubna a speed recovery. And we have joining us Rana Hajar Rasooli that ignites change through innovation and collaboration. Thank you so much for joining us, Lubna. How are you?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, thank you so much. Actually, because like funny thing is that, you know, you're all about climate and so on. And on the 11 Dubai show, we had a story of a lot of dead fish at the Dubai Canal and Business Bay. And there has been like, I don't know if it's like scientifically correct or not, but that it's due to the heat and temperature. Would you believe, would you actually confirm that?
Honestly, I can't speak to that so much because there's so many different angles that we can look at this. There's, you know, rising temperatures, which is also exacerbated by something that's called El Nino. And that's part of the ENSO cycle, which is really regular kind of weather temperature and climate related changes that happen over the course of a few years. So we're actually at the intersection of El Nino that causes this kind of humidity and a lot of, heat rising within the kind of temperatures in the Arabian Peninsula. So we actually have seen this happen before. And that's, you know, something that we cannot yet, we can't really fully confirm until we know later on and that, you know, relevant tests are conducted.
Well, Rana, I would like to ask, you know, that was just like my personal, I would say, I was wondering, you know, the explanation behind that. But let's jump to our first question. Rana, can you walk us through the process of how you put your company operations on hold to mobilize resources for those in need during the floods?
Sure. I think it's really important to say that, you know, as a climate tech founder, it was so important for us to actually walk the talk. You know, a lot of us work in the sustainability space, and we actually had a series of kind of conferences and events that week. And, you know, my team and I felt that it would be really hypocritical for us not to actually take, you know, note of the situation. The authorities are working around the clock. We also noticed that there was like, you know, there was a need. People needed essentials. There was also the kind of concept of, you know, we've been through it through COVID before, right? Stay inside, try to stay safe, minimize the health and safety risk as much as possible. So we actually initiated this kind of concept called the Helpful Neighbors Initiative. And the Helpful Neighbors Initiative was just a really basic process that, you know, started a WhatsApp group and said, you know, identify where you are, what you kind of have in excess. Let's say if you have extra milk or you have extra eggs or you've got, you know, vegetables or water, to stop people going out, just stick the piece of paper outside on your door and just get to know everybody on your floor. Try not to leave your building. So kind of over the next few days, we started amassing a couple of hundred kind of, you know, followers on the WhatsApp group. We saw obviously, you know, some supplies were dwindling, people were wondering what to do. And so it kind of started, you know, exacerbating from then. So it was really a story of how the community came together in an incredible way to show a lot of resilience. And, you know, and the funny thing that actually came out of that, a lot of people messaged me and said, hi, Mr. Rana, hi, Mr. Rana. I was like, hello, hi, I'm not a mister, but how are you doing? How can we help you? So, you know, it was a really interesting take on, you know, how for some reason people thought the leadership team was run by guys as well. Yeah. But we were, majority of us were women, actually.
I mean, it's incredible that, you know, you are kind of like breaking the stigma that men are the only ones that work in such a field. You know, women can as well, by the way, work in such a field to everyone who is watching. So yes, which leads me to my next question is, how did you create a system to connect people in need with those who had excess resources without soliciting, you know, financial donations?
So the whole thing was, number one, we don't have a charity license, and it was strictly against our code of conduct at any stage. So we said, we are not, you know, accepting donations. We're not accepting payments. Do not pay us, actually. Don't talk to us about the subject. If you can help, there could be multiple ways to go about it. If you find a neighbor in need, that was the case that a lot of people did, that they were already going downstairs and venturing out to supermarkets. They just buy extra and bring it up to their neighbors. The second option was obviously as well, looking at the concept that, you know, SMEs are also going to be kind of struggling for a couple of days. We had the Eid break, you know, a lot of people were kind of holidaying and venturing outwards. Then we also had, of course, the weather conditions, and some of these smaller SMEs, they might have lost stock, they might have lost customers, they might have lost access to a lot of their regular customers. So we actually said, identify kind of a small grocery store or, you know, a business of your choice and confirm it's safe for them to kind of deliver within that hyperlocal area. And then that's how they would, you know, do that. So essentially, we're hitting two birds with one stone, which is obviously stimulating that economic recovery for the SMEs. And, as you know, at the same time, getting all the kind of essentials to people that needed to also, you know, receive it as well.
Wow. I mean, beautiful. But can you share like a specific case of someone in need who received critical resources through, you know, during the flood and so on?
We honestly impacted, I think we tallied it up. Again, our work is an impact. So we had a full backend team that was, you know, focused on tech. So, you know, we actually discussed in the beginning is that how are we going to make sure, you know, we segment all of this, we don't overlap our efforts. You know, there was a lot of amazing volunteering work going on ground anyway. So obviously, you know, before we decided to even partner up with another volunteer group, we had to make sure and get the clear from the authorities, is it safe to do so? Where's the PPE equipment? So we had one person who doesn't even live in the UAE. They had a partner in the UAE who was, you know, we were preemptively, you know, looking at what the authorities are recommending for preventative measures because of the stagnant water. So they said, listen, we've got a whole bunch of, you know, kind of PPE equipment, mosquito sprays, masks, sanitizer. We know the drill. We've been through COVID. And, you know, they dispatched all of these materials, and this was given to areas within, you know, stagnant water, mostly in Sharjah at that time. And so there was other many, many examples as well. There was one guy that had actually braved the floods. He went to one of the pickup points and he didn't take anything for himself. I'm like, we know that you said you were running out of groceries. You ordered take-in the night before. What happened? He came back and said, if we've learned anything, it's that resource sharing is so important and community is so important. This is, you know, a legacy we'll carry with, you know, with ourselves. There was others that needed, you know, medical health advice as well. There was another volunteer group that sort of, we were discussing with them. I said, guys, maybe it's good if we can, you know, get in touch with some of the clinics and, you know, they might be willing to provide kind of free telehealth medicine. And they said, yep, no problem. After a couple of minutes, they came back and said, we've got 100 doctors on standby. I was like, okay, you know, this is what happens when you join forces, right? So, you know, that was, we had, you know, hundreds of people that had ailments. They had physical ailments. They had cancer. They had diabetes. They had high blood pressure. So, you know, they needed to check in with their doctors until the authorities gave the clear that it's, you know, they're able to kind of dispatch it and get it up to them while keeping them inside safe. So we had a lot of really heartwarming examples from that. And it's, you know, really interesting you brought this up because, if you know, a few of us were actually discussing and saying, when are we going to meet up? Some of us don't even know where we're from, what we do. We don't even know each other's names. So we've really made a lot of friends for life because this sort of adversity has shown how strong the UAE community is. And nobody cares whether, you know, we had pastors and doctors and cleaners and people from all walks of life. And they didn't discriminate. They just wanted to help each other. And it was the most wonderful thing.
I mean, you know, we've talked like earlier before on the 11 Dubai show that a lot of people looked at the flood in like a negative way. Yes, it has caused a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it has as well shown us that, you know what, there's a positive aspect. It has shown that people, you know, do actually help each other and has stood up for one another in a way or another, just like, you know, like yourself, which is, I would say, beautiful. So what strategies did you employ to mobilize a community group of over 800 individuals to assist more than 3,000 people while minimizing health, safety, and environmental risks?
So the strategies we employed, we thought about this really carefully from the outset. We said, look, the first thing is you need to know about establishing any community groups in general is that you're always going to have, you know, misinformation. And that to me as a tech and climate geek, yeah, and as a PhD researcher, is that you want to stop that from happening. So some of us said we have to moderate the group. We have to make sure no information is spread because misinformation is, it's a disease in itself. It spreads faster than anything. So that was the first thing, was strategically we need to come up with data banks, leverage our technology, because the core of what we do again is resource sharing. And, you know, it was really funny because before this, people didn't understand what the relationship is between climate efforts, let's say mitigation and adaptation, to resource sharing. And very quickly, they came to understand that the link is very critical. Localization efforts are really critical. Keeping a really clean, you know, data bank of the needs and the wants and the excess resources of people for them to reallocate it is also really critical. So we kind of employed a really strict approach in terms of minimizing the people on ground, making sure that they're fully equipped with, you know, PPE, working really closely with authorities. And once again, we had a lot of back-end assistance as well. So, you know, that kind of tech front is really, you know, what we're strategically leveraging is that we're not trying to be heroes here, right? You don't want to kind of step into a situation like this and do things that you're not necessarily an expert in. We're experts in matching resources and technology and climate tech. So we stuck with that, and we were able to, you know, with just a community of 800 people, you know, with some, you know, partnering with some other volunteer groups as well, we actually did the tally and we found out more than 4,000 people were impacted from this. And so this is, you know, something that we realized that you don't necessarily need to get an enormous amount of people involved to have an enormous impact. Actually, our, you know, slogan, not to go too much into the business side, is local synergies, global impact, right? So this is something that we really try to leverage as much as possible, is to find out everyone's strengths, list it out, allocate really specific roles, and then execute, of course, again, you know, in the with the respective support of the authorities as well.
Wow. All right. Well, how did temporarily, let's say, halting your company's business activities align with the core values and mission of the surplus?
So that was really important for us. Look, as a climate tech startup and as a startup, a lot of people will relate to this. You know, they still have to, you know, go about their business. They have to attend all these conferences. We decided, no, we need to, you know, really address some, you know, relevant concerns over here at the moment. And this is something that we have to do because we genuinely care. It's not about money for us. You know, we believe, like, you know, what we're doing eventually will become, you know, hopefully the kind of intersection between climate adaptation and mitigation. So we paused all of our business operations and leveraged that expertise. Instead of doing it between businesses, we shifted gear to do it for individuals and communities. Now, in saying so, 2-3 days ago, we actually halted those operations because the authorities said, hey, we've got our own WhatsApp lines now. This is what we're doing. We were, you know, saying, this is wonderful, we're going to step back, let's get back to what we're good at. So now we created this kind of WhatsApp group and community for SMEs that were affected, that want to help each other. We even had so much, you know, assistance from businesses because we've got that network already. Like Alguerre Foods was wonderful. They just called us up and said, listen, we've got, you know, like a truckload of food we can give you guys, you know, what can we do? We said, fine, we'll arrange the delivery and put it at a drop-off point and the rest of it. So going forward, now we've received a lot of inquiries from the SMEs that similarly need this, you know, kind of assistance, and they want to come together and, you know, make use of that. Even some of the ones that weren't affected by the floods are seeing the potential, because if you're stuck with idle stock in general, you know, depreciating assets, think about, you know, forklifts, extra warehouse space, it's still costing you money. So our kind of modus operandi is you could really reduce these emissions as much as possible, greenhouse gas emissions and CO2 emissions, and also become profitable by sharing these extra resources. You know, so the whole thing is, if you're hoarding, well, there's an option for you. You don't need to throw everything to landfill. There will always be someone to take it off your hands, and as a business, obviously pay you for it as well.
I mean, it's of course, like, it just shows how everyone wanted to get together for good after the flood, which is, like, beautiful. You know, we've seen a lot of restaurants give out free meals to those affected by the flood, which leads me to the question of, what observations have you made regarding the ripple effect of kindness within the community following a natural calamity like the floods in Dubai?
We've honestly observed that there is enormous amounts of resilience that, you know, the UAE can, the UAE community, expats, citizens, they come together no matter what. It was absolutely a testament of, you know, solidarity, of unity. We didn't have a single bad experience. It was actually, we were trying to slow down a lot of the inquiries coming through because people are like, I want to help, I want to volunteer. We're like, guys, if you could volunteer, we'd suggest, you know, helping with some, you know, let's say data collection, some of the matchmaking, do something more administrative, stay inside. You know, we also saw that there was people that, you know, wanted to actually said, I've got loads of supplies, we've got this, and we've got kayaks, we can help out with this, we can drive to other Emirates that need it. And we said, actually, you know, from our perspective, our humble perspective, if you don't mind, stay where you are. You know, right now it's just minor inconveniences, everything will be back up to normal very soon. So, you know, this is just the type of things that we were trying to issue to be very mindful of what's going on. But also, people wanted to play a role. They were really eager to help. So we tried to also assign roles, you know, for them to help within their kind of local context, you know, or, you know, potentially do whatever they can within their capacity and within their means as well. Some cases we had people, you know, they had elderly aunts or a really sick child that was home alone. They couldn't get back home. It was, can you have a phone conversation with them? If you live in the same building, go upstairs, share a meal with them. So that kind of psychological I suppose, safeguarding, and that togetherness was really important, because obviously it was a stressful, you know, situation for some people. So making sure that they have someone to talk to, you know, it went a really long way. We saw entire communities come together. There was people in buildings that have never met before, that have never crossed paths, and now they're having regular dinners together. So that's what I'm hoping will, you know, will continue, and that's the legacy. We've stepped back. We've all done what we have to. The community can take full credit for this. As Surplus, we don't always say it was us. Yeah, it's everyone coming together, and that's what's really wonderful. And I hope that legacy will continue.
I think honestly, the floods have just like shown us it for sure will, and I hope it actually does. So, in what ways do you believe that the response to the floods demonstrated the true spirit of, you know, confluent cultures in Dubai, with individuals from like diverse backgrounds coming together to support one another? Like, we know, like, Dubai is like filled with a lot of like ethnicities, religions, different religions, and different people from different nationalities, and so on and on, and everyone accepts each other. So how, like, if you can just like give us like, how did you, you know, in what ways do you believe that the response to the floods actually demonstrated the energy, or like, let's say, you know, like that vibe of Dubai?
I think it was even broader than Dubai. We had it was an amazing response everywhere. The UAE in general is very multicultural. It's a cultural melting pot. You know, we have, you know, various ages, you know, occupations, ethnicities, and, you know, it spoke for itself. You know, you can see all over the news how much people were eager to help each other. You know, no matter how small or large the efforts were, it really spoke for itself. I feel that that's why, you know, under the wise leadership that we have in Dubai, in the UAE, that's why recovery efforts went much faster. And, you know, there is a lot of discussion about, oh, you know, you know, all of these kind of stormwater flood systems and everything. It's like, guys, let's put this into context. We received this more than the same amount of rain the UK would have received in 5 or 6 months, more than a year, 2 years, some estimates say 3 years. Right, but look how fast the response was over here. Even the best, you know, drain water systems that are built in the world, you know, would struggle to cope with this. So we need to put this into context and say, actually, if, you know, if any of the other countries were struggling with this, and you can see in various other contexts, we recovered the fastest, actually. So we need to also, you know, bring that truth forward.
I mean, for sure, you know, like Dubai, like, did not fully recover in 3 days, but in 3 days, you know, it, I would say, got back on its feet. And, you know, we keep on talking about it as, you know, Dubai, you know, just like got back on track, which is beautiful, which is what makes Dubai, Dubai. Well, thank you so much, Rana, for joining us. Our interview has come to an end. Thank you for the amazing initiative that you've done and created, you know, regarding the floods and helping all of the people. And it was beautiful talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. So, you guys, this is the end of our show, you guys. And you will be seeing me and Lubna, hopefully, on Monday next week. Goodbye.